Drizzt was across the room, near the hearth, the flames shining off his ebon skin, orange-highlighted reflections showing in his long white hair. He too was quite naked, and Catti-Brie took the moment to admire his form, the grace of his movements as he tossed another log onto the fire. It bounced around the half-consumed faggots within and settled too near to the front, and she heard Drizzt sigh as he considered it. She thought he would reach for the poker, but he did not. Indeed, he moved the small iron screen farther off to the side and reached in with his bare hand to retrieve the log, which had not yet caught, though tiny sparks could already be seen within the folds of the bark. Drizzt laid that log aside and turned back to the low-burning fire, bending low, then instinctively jumping back as one burning log popped, sending a spray of sparks up the chimney. Catti-Brie muffled her laugh with the blankets, not wanting Drizzt to know that she was spying on him. She pulled the blankets down from in front of her face, though, her mouth hanging wide open, when Drizzt reached into the fire to rearrange the smoldering logs within. He grabbed one glowing log, flames erupting all around his forearm, with hardly a wince, and reset it upon the others. Apparently satisfied with his handiwork, he retrieved the new log he had set aside and carefully placed it on the others. He stood, brushed his hands together, and replaced the screen.
"How?"
Catti-Brie asked from the bed, and Drizzt turned to regard her. The woman's gaze moved across the small room to the far wall where Drizzt had hung his sword belt. She noted the gem-encrusted, black cat-shaped pommel of the scimitar Icing Death, which she knew could offer Drizzt such protection from the bite of fire. Had he grown so attuned to the blade that it could lend him such even when he was not carrying it? "Good morning," he greeted. "Oh, and it is a fine one, though the stubborn wind of Winter's End bites hard this day. The others are off to gather mounts and supplies."
"How did you do that?"
"Do what?"
"You reached into the fire. It should have curled the flesh from your finger bones."
Drizzt came over to the bed and sat beside her, lifting his left hand to reveal a ring, made wholly of ruby, a sparkling red band around his finger. "I took it from a mage, a drow noble," he explained, as he slid it off and held it up for Catti-Brie. "In the bowels of Gontalgrim. It is a long tale and a good one for the road." He reached his hand out, offering the ring to the woman for a closer look.
"It protects you from the flames."
"As surely as my scimitar," Drizzt replied. "Indeed, when first I put it on, I felt a sense of affinity between the two, scimitar and ring. It was almost as if their magic had nodded respectfully to each other." Catti-Brie looked at him curiously and skeptically, for she had never heard of such a thing. Drizzt's weapon, powerful though it was not sentient in any way that she knew, and rings such as this ruby band were not uncommon, not overly powerful, and not known to possess any type of empathy or telepathy. She handed it back, but Drizzt caught her hand before she could retract it. "In many cultures, the ring is the sign of fidelity and undying love," he explained as he slipped it onto her finger. "Take this in that spirit, and with the added benefit of the protection it offers. With my scimitar in hand, we too can walk across hot coals." Catti-Brie looked curiously at the jewel. For just a fleeting second, when it had gone onto her hand, she had felt something. Something like a call from afar, or as if the ring was feeling her as surely as she was feeling it. The sensation was gone in a moment, and then it seemed just a ruby band once more, but one that had shrunken already to perfectly fit her, as magical rings were wont to do. She held her hand up to better view it with the ring on, and looked through her fingers to the violet eyes of the drow she so loved.
"The others are gone?"
she asked.
"They left with the dawn,"
Drizzt replied.
Caddybri lifted the edge of the blanket, and Drizzt didn't need to be invited into the bed twice.
"I thought we had returned for Drizzt,"
Regis said to Caddybri. But the two at the back of the line of five, as they made their way into the rocky dells around Kelvin's cairn, the long and winding approach to the dwarven complex. He didn't even try to hide the regret from his voice, and Caddybri caught it, he knew, when she turned to regard him with obvious concern.
"Were you hoping for a fight?"
"I was hoping that I would be of use," Regis replied. "I left much behind me to get to Icewind Dale."
"You would have died without us,"
the woman replied.
"Without you, not me. You arrived armed with healing spells. My potions were not needed. Indeed, I was not needed. Had I remained in the south, the outcome here would have been the same."
"You cannot know that," said Wulfgar.
He slowed to let the other two catch up to him. Drizzt and Brunner were far in the distance, already around the next bend.
"Something you might have done. Someone you may have met and influenced, perhaps played a part before we ever came upon him atop the mountain."
"Or perhaps those assassins we fought on the bank of the lake would have come for me instead, and alone I would have been slain,"
Caddybri added. But Regis shook his head, having none of it. His thoughts were to the south with the grinning ponies. His memories drifted across the sea of fallen stars, to sweet Danala Topolino and a mercantile empire he could claim beside her. It was wonderful to be among the companions of the hall again, of course, but there remained the question of why. Duty had brought him here running, but what duty might that be? To fight a war for Brunner and Mithril Hall? To go and do battle with a vampire? Laudable missions both, he reasoned, but neither seemed above the work he was doing with the grinning ponies. Caddybri stopped her walk and grabbed him by the shoulder to halt him too, then called Wulfgar close to join them.
"Drizzt won his fight on the night we rejoined him," she explained. "Even if we had not been there and he had succumbed to his wounds, that night victory was his."
Regis looked to Wulfgar for some clarification of the surprising remark, but the barbarian could only shrug, obviously as much at a loss as he.
"The battle was for his soul, not his body,"